Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to the Room 104 podcast with Cormac Moore.
FM 104.
It's Cormac and Trish here on Room 104. Now, Vice.com have released another one of their just mind-blowing documentaries. And oftentimes I find what they do really well is remind you that there's some craziness that goes on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you wouldn't believe it. Sometimes you're like, no, that's not real. That doesn't actually happen.
That couldn't be real.
No. And then you're like, oh, no, unfortunately, it is. But they released one recently, only a couple of days ago, on buying organs on the black market. Now, in my brain, that only happens in movies. You know what I mean? Like that organ harvesting and black market harvesting. No, that can't actually be true. But they've done a whole documentary on it. And one of the guys that features in it wrote a book a few years ago called The Red Market. And let me just give you the subtitle of this book. It's The Red Market, on the trail of the world's organ brokers, bone thieves, blood farmers and child traffickers. And it just blows my mind that this stuff actually goes on in the world. But we are very lucky to nab the man who wrote that book. And he joins us now live on the line. Scott Carney, sir, how are you?
Cormac, it is great to talk to you. Yeah, I'm doing great.
Welcome to the show. Now, Scott, first of all, how did you find out about all this? Because as Cormac was saying there, we were gobsmacked when we saw this documentary. Just words. I was lost for words. But when you first discovered all this, and obviously you wrote a book on it, what brought you to the scene?
So I was a foreign correspondent based in India, and I was living in the South Indian city of Chennai. And I mean, it was crazy. This was right after the tsunami killed 150,000 people. And there were all these refugee camps popping up right along the coast. And the refugee camp that was like probably about 2 miles from my house, a news story came out in the local press saying that all of the women in the village had sold their kidneys. And I was just, like you, completely gobsmacked that this happened. And then I spent the next year sort of interviewing, hundreds of people who had had their organs removed because of the medical establishments that exist at the time. And, you know, at one point we had National Geographic cameras come in and we just lined up the women and we had the cameras just roll down the line of them. And since they're wearing saris, you can see all of their scars where they had their kidneys removed.
Oh,
it was crazy.
Like, how much were they being paid for that? And who is buying them?
Mm-hmm. Right. So this is one of the very common misconceptions about organ trafficking, is that there's these like cabals of people who are like violently, you know, kidnapping people.
Yeah.
People wake up in bathtubs of ice. That is just not the story. What the story actually is that when you have like world-class medical infrastructure and it's next to extreme poverty, there's this arbitrage scenario where people can acquire human flesh very, very cheaply because people are so desperate. So what happens is that these hospitals, and you know, in India, there's an enormous diabetes problem. Many, many, many people have organ failure. So there's a lot of demand for organs. And incidentally, there's a lot of people who have almost no opportunity to make a living, which makes them targets for these hospital administrators and people sort of very high up in the medical chain to, find ways to acquire organs, usually offering very low sums of money, anywhere between $800, you know, I've heard as low as $400 to as high as $2,000 for For a kidney. And usually what happens is the person will come in and have the operation, and the kidney will go mostly to Indians, but also to foreigners who fly in. And the operation will happen, and they'll get like half their payment up front and half on the back end. But usually the back end payment never happens.
Oh, wow.
See, this is the thing. That's what shocked me the most, is that you can actually go online and just order yourself a bloody kidney or corneas. That was the next thing. Apparently corneas are ranging from $30,000.
Vice got that wrong. Vice sort of didn't really do their research. They just got some random interviews. No, you can't just go online and order a kidney.
Okay.
It's much, much more involved. I mean, your search may start on the internet, but you really need the buy-in from these hospital administrators. So there's these black market connections. It's social engineering. It's finding people who know other people. It's not like there's a website, you know, organs.com somewhere on the dark web.
Rent an organ, you know. Like Uber for kidneys. Right. You just hit a button and there's a little kidney emoji that comes around. No, but again, shouldn't be laughing at this at all, but what I'm amazed by is, again, the image in my mind was, as you said, you go traveling, you get drugged, you wake up, you go to sleep in a hostel, you wake up in a bath and your kidneys are gone. But you're saying that this is part of the mainstream medical infrastructure over there, that there's some dodgy goings on, but people are brought into, are people brought into actual professional
hospitals
where this is being signed off as like a wink and a nod, where it's like we're doing this. So it's like legitimately through their healthcare system. Or illegitimate.
Yeah, that's the only way it really happens. Mm. I mean, it's not like if you want a kidney and you're the person receiving the kidney, you want to go to some back garage, right, to get your kidney transplant. You have to really have these people in the same hospital, usually. I mean, it's just logistically more difficult to, you know, transfer it from your auto parts shop where you're removing the kidney to send it to the hospital. So, I mean, it's all about collusion that comes down from the top. And it's not just India where I did my research. I mean, this is literally all over the world in places where you have extreme poverty.
Yeah.
And world-class health infrastructures and, you know, legal infrastructure that is happy to look the other way. And that happens all over the place. And if you are a person in a country where it's more difficult to do that, I don't think it's legal in Ireland anymore to sell your kidney, right? You can, in theory, I mean, I know you can. You can go to some of these other countries and with a little bit of negotiating and conversations, it's possible to make these connections occur.
Just wanted to ask you then on that, right? So these things are happening obviously in various different countries. Is it illegal in India? So technically, is it illegal? As you said, it's just
It's illegal. It's 100% illegal to buy organs in every country in the world. I believe, actually, maybe the Philippines might have some gray areas and Egypt might have some gray areas right now. And Iran has some gray areas. But in general, you're not allowed to buy a kidney because when you do that, you create an underclass, an organ underclass where human flesh only moves upwards and never downwards on the pyramid. Like me, I make a pretty good living. There's no way you can come to me and say, I'll give you $1 million for your kidney, because I'll say no.
Yeah,
There's just no number where I'm like, yeah, I'll give up my flesh. And it's only somebody who's in a really desperate position, or occasionally altruistic donations, those occur as well, and those are fine.
Yeah.
But there's no incentive for somebody who's not desperate to just like randomly sell their kidney. There's health complications, believe it or not, to giving up, you know, large parts of your flesh.
Yeah.
Now, how true is it then about the harvesting of organs from executed prisoners? Because that was something that was mentioned in the doc as well. And I thought, what the hell?
Yep. So in China, there have been many, many reports that have come out over the years, including testimony in front of the U.S. Congress about basically state-sanctioned organ trafficking from their prisoner population, where they will tissue type lots of people, especially Falun Gong. That's this sort of political minority group that has some sort of esoteric exercises that Chinese people think actually make them very healthy, but they're also political dissidents. So they have a lot of those people in prison. And the people I've spoken with who have left the prisons, who've made it out, have said that they would tissue type all of the Falun Gong practitioners. And then mysteriously, some of these people would be just disappear afterwards. And then another set of testimony that came out in front of the U.S. Congress actually interviewed several doctors who were involved in the organ extraction process for prisoners, where they would literally have these people on the table, and the doctor said they were conscious, and they would just harvest like all sorts of things. They would be death by execution, with the heart being the last thing that they take out.
Jesus
it is
Christ.
Ghastly, ghastly. And this is just something that happened. And there was also a book called Larry's Kidney, which was by a guy named Daniel Assarosa, where he actually flew to China with his brother and got a kidney from a prisoner and came back. And, you know, in the book, which is sort of weirdly comedy, which is sort of gruesome and weird, but he actually shows that the whole process is fairly straightforward, easy, and not even that expensive. It's quite affordable to kill somebody for their organs.
I still can't get it into my brain that this is happening like today, that this is happening, this is a real thing, and that this isn't just some sort of slasher movie, that, you know, a horror movie that's sent out. It blows my mind. And for somebody who's written a book on this and delved into it, what have been maybe some of the more, two or three of the more shocking things that you discovered from going down this road?
Well, there are really markets for absolutely everything. In the book, The Red Market, I talk about human bones, especially for, you know, when doctors study anatomy, they need bones. And for up until about 1984 or five, Calcutta was exporting 60,000 human skeletons a year since the 1800s, mm-hmm. which means like if you died in Calcutta, your skeleton was sold to doctors around the world for about $300 a bone box. Very well documented. I looked at the market for human blood. Again, on the Indo-Nepal border, I found people who were drugged and kept literally in cow sheds by a former milkman, which is sort of a bizarre side story, who would extract, he would basically find these people at bus stands. They're usually like pretty poor, desperate people, offered them like $25 to drain a pint of blood. And instead he would drain three or four pints of blood so that they were minimally conscious.
Yeah.
And he would keep them there for 6-7 months until they would die of bloodletting. This was to supply the local supply of blood for that town, which had a lot of hospitals in it. That was the most gruesome thing I found.
Just think, these people are so depraved, and you would not, you couldn't imagine a human being inflicting any kind of that amount of pain on someone else. But you know what really, really, really shocks me? It's the corrupt doctors, because I think you go in, you take this oath to protect, and then you do something like this. Have you ever spoken to any of these doctors before and maybe asked what the hell is going on with them?
Many of these doctors I've spoken with. And universally, and this is one thing I found in many other parts of my journalism as well, is when you meet the bad guy, right, the criminal kingpin, they always have a rationalization for why what they're doing is good. So when you talk to a doctor, they don't tell you, I'm stealing organs, right? What they say is, I'm paying a fair price for organs and I'm saving lives. I mean, and so they spin it in their own mind because they think this way. It's not like they're lying. They really believe that they are saving people because they have all these patients. Think about that doctor. They have all these patients coming into their office all the time saying, Doc, if I don't get a kidney, I'm going to die. And the doctor's like, maybe I can solve this problem. And this is what the true insidiousness of all this. It's what Hannah Arendt wrote with the banality of evil, right? Which is that the fact that these evil things happen and there's always this rationalization for why those terrible outcomes are actually have a rationality that makes sense to the people involved.
After speaking to people like that, are you able to sleep at night properly? Scott, tell us the truth.
It was a dark time. I spent 6 years in that, and it was you know, it's hard to see people going through suffering. It's hard to see these systems that are perpetuating it. But you know, the other thing about being an investigative journalist, I think it does take a certain type of person to go in there and be like, I'm doing the best I can for this, and there is a reason to go out there and get these stories that, you know, hopefully does a little good in the world. And I will say that my work after doing all of that you know, years of research, I do have one two positive things that happened because of the red market. The first was it's no longer legal to take human remains out of India in your carry-on baggage on an airplane. So that was a pretty big...
That was legal.
yeah, why that had to become illegal, but well done, Scott. We'll give you a round of applause for that. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And what's the second
one? The other thing that has happened because of my work and other journalists in the same realm as well is that it's no longer legal for people to fly from Europe and the United States and other countries outside of India to fly to India to buy babies on the surrogate markets, where at that time there was this enormous industry where women would get impregnated in India and carry foreign babies, and then the foreigners would come and pick up the baby and fly away. That's no longer legal, in part because of my work. So that's a little bit better than the carry-on baggage bit, but otherwise... Yeah. It's all the same. It's all still going on.
Okay. Literally talk to Scott for hours and hours and go darker and darker and darker. But if you want to get more information and you're listening, it's a fascinating book. Go check it out. It's called The Red Market, available on all usual book platforms, good bookshops as well. You will find it. Are you working on anything slightly more positive at the moment, Scott?
Oh my God. I have a book about biohacking that's out called What Doesn't Kill Us, about why you should be jumping in cold water all the time. I discovered the guy Wim Hof, who is sort of famous these days. And I wrote a New York Times bestselling book about him. And I have a book coming out in 3 months about the deadliest storm in human history and how that almost sparked a nuclear war. So that's not that positive. But I'll work on it. I'll get
see how your mind works here.
For you.
Can you imagine that? It's like, yeah, just strike out all of humanity in one fell swoop. Listen, Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. If people want to find you on social media or your website or anything, where's the best place they can go?
Yeah, S.G. Carney, S.G.C.A.R.N.E.Y. at Twitter and Instagram. And there's also Google, where you can find the other stuff that I do.
Brilliant.
Well, Scott, continue the amazing work you're doing because you are making changes.
All right. Well, I appreciate the chance to talk to you guys. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.